This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is The Informer, Joy 94.9's nightly news and current affairs program, and your link to the stories that matter.
The reality is that many LGBTIQ women face social infertility because making a family comes at a literal financial cost. With women already on the lower financial bracket of the workplace, the cost of starting a family for women in our communities can be a big surprise. So when do we start talking to young LGBTIQ women about preparing for a career and the cost of starting a family? Dina Curie investigates as he spoke to lesbian mother Fiona Newton about what it was like planning to be a mother when you were accessing fertility treatments.
It's funny, you don't really have an understanding of what the cost is going to be up front, I think, because it depends how many times you have to try, you know, do the insemination and go through the IVF cycle. There's lots of kind of expenses that only become apparent as you go along, and it was a bit more expensive than what we thought. It's a little bit of a funny process in that Medicare does give you rebates for some of it, but not all of it. So it's really important to understand what you can get Medicare from. And one of the things that I think is a little bit discriminatory against particularly lesbian couples wanting to go through the IVF cycle is that you have to go through two cycles of what they call insemination, which is essentially turkey basting that the doctor does, whether you like it or not. We wouldn't have chosen to do it, but it costs $5,000 to do that. And then if you do that, you're deemed, and it doesn't work, that's when you can be deemed infertile. But there's a little bit more to it. You basically have to go on hormones before that, and then time your cycle appropriately, and then it's kind of done at the right time, I suppose, and with the right hormone levels in your body. So it's a little bit more science than just here's a Vegemite jar and good luck. but it's a bit annoying that we have to go through a process to prove ourselves to be infertile, yet we're a lesbian couple that is already, you know, socially infertile. So why do we have to go through that process, and why do we have to pay that money? And if you don't pay that money and then are deemed infertile, then you have to go without Medicare payments. So it's a little bit, can be damned if you do, damned if you don't.
It's a fact that motherhood has to be very, very planned for most female-bodied, same-sex-attracted people. And when other means come into play to make a family, it's a potentially expensive and difficult thing to go through. Women are already at a disadvantage socially and financially within workplaces. And as an LGBTIQ woman, career planning plus family planning has mounting costs that you may not expect. Should we be teaching all young LGBTIQ women to save for family planning early? Because if you can't get knocked up by accident, it can be very freaking expensive. I spoke to Anne from Rainbow Fertility, who's a fertility specialist and gynecologist, about what kind of base costs you can expect if you have a working uterus.
If someone has uterus tubes and ovaries and wants to get pregnant, then the options, and everyone has choice, that's sometimes difficult if you have to make a choice, isn't it? But yeah, everyone has choice. So usually the younger a woman is, the more we're considering or suggesting more natural or less invasive methods, because, you know, really that would be best to do first if, you know, time allowed. So for example, if a woman is, you know, 35 and is wanting to get pregnant and appears, you know, the system, reproductive system is functioning, then usually we're talking about insemination rather than jumping straight to IVF. Of course, some people want to choose to do IVF, and a lesbian couple may want to do reciprocal or interpartner IVF, where one does the stimulation to get the eggs, using a sperm donor to fertilise, create embryos, and then the other partner actually carries their child. So that would mean having to do IVF. So all of these different choices have costs. So the simplest cost and choice is insemination, and the out-of-pocket cost for doing a cycle is around $2,500 to $3,000. So it's a very expensive option, but it is actually cheaper than doing IVF. Because of this cost, some people do home insemination. We know this happens, of course. Their own choice of donor. If people choose to do this, it's obviously free, but people should be aware of, and that is obviously there is a small chance of contracting viruses or bacteria from sperm, and to try as much as possible to reduce their chance by having their donor screened regularly. And I think not choosing someone who you think might be at risk as well is the other thing. So, yeah, so the cost of doing home insemination is free. The cost of doing clinic insemination is around $2,500 to $3,000 out of pocket. The cost of doing IVF, if Medicare cannot be accessed, is around $10,000 to $11,000. If Medicare can be accessed, it's around $5,000 to $6,000. So it's all extremely expensive, I suppose, is the bottom line.
But that's if you have a working uterus. What if there are complications?
The whole plan, of course, is to get a baby as quickly as possible. It's, simplest, safest and cheapest. But, yeah, say someone has symptoms suggestive of endometriosis, or they've had an ultrasound that suggests they have endometriosis, then we may well be looking at talking about treating that first, like surgery. So, yeah, it does depend on what their history is. And if someone has an issue of, pelvic operations or any idea that they may have some issues with tubes, then we assess that first. We look at finding out if they truly do have, problems with the tubes, and that may be by tubal function test, which is an outpatient procedure, which is, uncomfortable. It's not a little bit painful, where dye is pushed through the uterus and tubes to see if there's any blockages. Or it can be done asleep, which is still an operation, which is a laparoscopy to assess tubal function. So, yeah, it depends what looks like or appears that might be a heads up that there could be a gynae issue before we start a treatment, because we're obviously wanting to maximise the chance of any treatment working.
The average age of first-time mothers across Australia is 30 years old, a number that's continuing to increase year after year. But this isn't something that they're seeing with first-time mothers at Rainbow Fertility.
The average age of lesbian women accessing fertility treatment is, in my practice, is younger than heterosexual couples. And the reasons for that I don't know, but I'm guessing maybe that heterosexual couples think, okay, well, we've got time, we can try when we like later on. Whereas it's obvious for lesbian women, if, they need sperm, that maybe they need to consider accessing a fertility service sooner rather than later, because it's something they, have on their on the table if they're wanting to have a child, that they need time and information about what they need to do and when they want to do it. And maybe that's a good thing, that people aren't leaving it longer, because female age is always the best indicator for fertility success, meaning the younger a woman is, the more likely it is to be successful.
So when is the right time for us to be talking to LGBTIQ women about family planning so that they can start planning for the costs involved?
I think the answer is always that whenever anyone's ready. So ideally in their 20s, which I know sounds young, fertility is best when a woman is aged, from 20 to 30, really. So in your 20s, if possible. But we'll see anyone of any age, of course. But, yeah, it's something to think about when you're young.
I asked how prepared people were when they hear about the cost of fertility treatments.
Because I think they've already done homework before they come and see me. So when I say, oh, look, it's going to be a shock, it's going to be very expensive, this is how much it is, they don't say, oh, I'm surprised. They say, oh, yeah, that's what I thought. So I'm not certain if that means, but you'd think it probably did, that there's a lot of people out there who are all wanting to access the service that, it's outside their budget, their current budget. So, yeah, I think that's probably where it stands. That people, if they come in, they've already done their homework and worked and called clinic and found out how much it's going to cost them.
So what about DIYing with a turkey baster? While not a course of action that is discouraged, Anne reminds us that you still need to make sure you're looking after yourself and your family in the best possible way.
I mean, I know that it has many advantages to do home insemination, but there are medical disadvantages of the risk in using fresh sperm. And it may not be a fertility specialist. It might be their GP, their family doctor that can do their, testing of their donor. So, which should also, of course, include a sperm test to check there's, good sperm there, that they're not spending months and months, trying something that's very unlikely to work.
The reality is that many LGBTIQ women suffer from social infertility, and making a family can be a costly endeavour that's ultimately worth it but expensive. We need to make sure we're letting our younger generations know the realities and the costs of the life that they want to have so they can start planning to build the best future for themselves and their families.
I believe that everyone should have a right to have a child, and we try to find a treatment that suits them. Yes, it is very medicalised, so it's not like, you know, it's not an intimate process that they can do at home with home insemination. So it has those disadvantages, but we try and be as respectful and helpful as we can be in a very medicalised setting. But that's for every patient, of course, not just same-sex attracted couples. So, yeah, but for everyone, I think that we know what we can offer, and we hope that we are meeting people's needs.
That was Dina Curie reporting with Anne from Rainbow Fertility.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.